Now to a very different story, also in the Washington Post magazine, a story about the quest for forgiveness. Imagine losing your 17-year-old son to murder. Now imagine knowing that the man who took his life lived right down the street and killed your son because his car alarm went off and woke him up. That's what Baltimore resident Bernard Williams has been going through for 14 years since his neighbor shot and killed his son, Vernon, whom he called Beethoven. The events of that tragic night had ruled Bernard's life until 2 years ago when he made the bold decision to meet his son's murderer face to face and in so doing to confront his anger. To make it happen, Bernard turned to a Baltimore program that helps the perpetrators and victims of crime find reconciliation. I'm joined now by Bernard Williams. Also with us is mediator Lauren Abramson. She's the founder and executive director of the Community Conferencing Center in Baltimore, who worked with Mr. Williams. I welcome you both. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Good to be here. Thank you.
And thank you. How are you doing, Michelle?
I'm okay. Lauren, I'm going to get to you in a minute, but Bernard, you know I hate to take you back there, but I did want to ask, how did you find out that your son had been killed?
A friend of his, I had just left my son, and I walked up and I spoke to him to remind him that he had a curfew, and we talked, and he asked me could he stay out for a half an hour, you know, so I didn't want to make that decision, but I went on since he was having fun. But anyway, I turned and I walked away from him, no more than about 5 or 10 minutes. I was in the house when his friends knocked on the door and said that he was shot, and, you know, I thought that they were joking until I heard the sirens and the helicopter and people, you know, all that commotion. So I just ran the way it was.
I understand that you went through a very tough time after the murder. And one of the things that I appreciated about this piece, by the way, is that it expressed what I've heard so many people say, is you don't want your son just to be a number. You know, he's a person. He had a life. What effect did it have on you to lose your boy? And let me say, first of all, I should have said at the beginning, I'm very sorry for your loss.
Well, thank you. You know, Vernon was my firstborn from a previous marriage, and his mother and I had divorced when he was an early age, and I think about like 2 years old. So I had custody of him from the time he was two up till the day he died. But you know, it was just him and I. I had to rearrange my life and everything to. Let's say I appreciate what single mothers and mothers go through, you know, taking care of child. So, you know, Vernon and I, we did everything. So he was just that special child, you know.
Well, how did you get the idea to meet William Norman, the man who killed your son? What gave you that idea?
Well, first of all, the stress and everything, you know, every time the anniversaries came up, like April and May, it was always going back to Mr. Norman, and you know, it wasn't doing me any good physically and mentally, so I talked it over with my wife, and I decided to go. She was taking another direction spiritually, so we decided to go that way. So, but it was a scripture in the Bible that it was saying, "How can you love God and hate your neighbor?" So, in order for me to make that trip, I had to get this man out of my life. You know, I had to get him out.
And you were very candid in the piece about the fact that drugs became part of your coping. Is that about right?
Yeah, it did. The use became heavier after he had died. You know, I was just maintaining. I was using drugs. Because I got hooked through prescription drugs, and after he had passed away, you know, I just went downhill, you know, and drugs was a way of helping me repress everything, you know, hide behind my feelings and everything. So, you know, but I went into rehab after he died because I had made him a promise because someone had told him that I was on drugs, and him and I got into like a little, it wasn't an argument or anything. It was just like a little, he was very disappointed because I had let him down because he said that I had, he stuck to everything that I had taught him about drugs.
Mm, wow. Lauren, can I bring you into the conversation? I wanted to ask, you heard Bernard talked about the spiritual foundation for seeking this reconciliation. What about for people who, for whom that isn't the motivator? What is the idea behind arranging these kinds of connections between people who have committed a crime and those who have been victims of it?
Right. Well, the main thing that we really offer people is a space and a structure for people to talk to each other. Because we've gotten so far away from that in our culture. Courts keep people from talking to each other. Mm. So we try to provide a space for people to do that.
Why do you think that's a good thing to do?
Yeah, it's incredible.
Why do you think that's a good thing to do? We heard Mr. Williams talk about why he needed to. Why do you think, from a community perspective, that's a good thing to do?
Because especially in the wake of conflict and crimes, people, for one thing, need a chance to heal. And I think that what people can do for each other is probably much greater than any professional can do for them or any institution can do for them. So when they're ready, I mean, it's not always something that people want to do immediately. But when they're ready, we really believe that people should have that opportunity. And like Bernard said, I mean, physically, it was hurting him. His diabetes was getting worse. There were a lot of his eye. He had eye problems, blood pressure problems. There were a lot of physiological things, aside from the spiritual things, that were affecting him by holding all this anger in.
Bernard, what do you think you got out of your meeting, William Norman?
I would never forget. I got a lot of answers to a lot of questions that I had because he had pleaded guilty, so therefore there was no trial, and we talked and everything and. I just got a chance to relieve him. What I did got out of it was the fact that originally I was going there to tell him, what effect his actions had on me, but it gave me, at the last minute, I had a chance to tell him and introduce him to my son. I had a chance to tell him all about my son, who he was, the chance that his actions didn't give my son a chance to do and everything like that. So what I did basically was I put a face to the image that I guess he was thinking about every time he he said not a day went by that he would thought about his actions and what he did. So I just wanted him to know who my son was.
You ultimately decided to go even further, not just meeting with him several times, but you actually attended his parole hearing to offer support for his early release. And as the story was recounted, even the commissioners were shocked by this. Why did you think you took that step?
I did that on the fact that my daughter and his daughter, they were at the time of my son, that all this took place. They were in the same public school kindergarten class, and throughout the whole school system up till their senior high, they remained friends, and which I didn't know until I got to talking to my daughter. But she was telling me some things about she was glad that I was in her life because she don't know where she would have been if I hadn't have been in her life and all her brothers and the rest of my kids' life. But she said that she think that his daughter was struggling, and she think that his daughter needs her father.
Mm-hmm.
So, and not only that, too, another thing, I didn't want to go through this parole issue. And another thing, instead of agonizing every year, at like May and April to May about that, my son's birthday and the anniversary of his death, I wanted to get Mr. Norman out of my life. To the point where I could start celebrating, to create a legacy for my son.
I do. Lauren, we only have about a minute or so left. One of the things that comes through in this piece is one of the important things for Mr. Williams is that Norman, William Norman seemed truly sorry. It was very important to him that William Norman really understand what he did and express remorse for it. But based on your experience, is that what if some people are not remorseful? Is reconciliation possible without that?
It's not always possible. And really, you know, it's we leave it up to the people to figure out where they can go with it. Sometimes it's just important for people to be able to tell their story, to be able to say how they've been affected by it to the person that did it. And sometimes that alone can be healing. Certainly it's a lot, you know, it can move a lot more forward if the person who caused the harm is genuinely remorseful. And for example, you know, Bernard reached out to Mr. Norman and said, when you get out, maybe we can go to schools and talk to kids and help them learn from our tragedy so that they don't have to go through it.
Do you think he will, Mr. Bernard? Do you think he will?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I'm a force issue anyway.
I believe you will. I'm so sorry, Mr. Williams. We're just out of time, and I apologize for that, and I do thank you for being willing to tell your story. It's a hard thing. It's a hard thing to talk about. Bernard Williams shared the story of confronting his son's killer in this week's Washington Post magazine. Lauren Abramson is the founder and executive director of the Community Conferencing Center in Baltimore. She has helped Mr. Williams and other victims of crime find reconciliation. They both joined us from member station WYPR in Baltimore. I thank you all so much. This story was featured in the current Washington Post magazine in an article by Karen Hupert. You can find the story at our website, the Tell Me More page of npr.org.